hot party. The trippers, the grasshoppers, the hip ones, all gathered in secrecy and flying high as a kite.
Hello and welcome to Trippin' Through Time, this podcast where we talk about the science, culture, and history behind psychoactive drugs. I am Randall.
I'm Stuart.
And today is episode 7, The DEA and the War on Drugs. Stuart, you want to go ahead and fire it off?
I'll fire it off.
Okay.
First, I want to mention something that's been in the news. I saw it on CNN.
Uh-huh.
I want to talk about the woman who did all that LSD.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She accidentally did...
55 hits is what...
I think it was. I said that, but I just made it up.
Oh.
Can I look it up?
I believed you. Yeah, you can look it up.
She did a big amount because she thought it was cocaine because it was powdered LSD.
Mm-hmm. LSD hydrochloride, probably.
So she took 550 times the usual dose, which they're saying is 100 micrograms.
Yeah, that's about right.
So wow. That's a lot.
550 milligrams then.
Is that right?
No, 550 micrograms is what she took. So 5.5 milligrams.
No, she took 550 times the normal dose.
Which
the normal
is 100
dose being,
micrograms?
According to CNN,
so that's
yes.
5,500 micrograms.
Yeah.
Which would be...
No, it's 55,000 micrograms.
55,000. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that is 5,500 milligrams then.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
55,000 divided by 1,000?
Sure, yeah.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's 5 grams?
No, 55 milligrams.
55 milligrams.
Yeah. Oh. There's 1,000 milligrams. No. Yeah, that would be 5.5 grams.
Right? Are we doing this math wrong? Should
type,
we just not?
Type in, just do it now. 100
uh-huh.
times 550.
Uh-huh. Wait. 100 times 550,
mm-hmm.
55,000.
Okay. Now divide that by 1,000.
55.
Okay. So 55 milligrams.
55 milligrams.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's a lot. Anyway,
a lot.
She took this and then said that it changed her life in a good way. She said her foot pain that she's had since her 20s, she's 46, was reduced. She's been, she was bipolar,
mm-hmm.
and she said that it helped her symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I just thought that was interesting.
And I have it on good authority, and I can't tell you what where I got this, but... Do trust me that they have just finished clinical trials for through the FDA for MDMA and PTSD.
And then
that's
it says
exciting.
This was in the Journal of Studies in Alcohol and Drugs. Journal of Studies on Alcohol and Drugs. Last month, a woman overdosed. They don't say how much she took, but she was pregnant.
Hmm.
And she gave birth to a healthy son.
Hmm.
That's
hmm.
it.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this will be the era of treating depression with now psychoactive drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I think this will be the new way to treat is psychotherapy.
And I saw this on CNN, which I think was the most interesting part because it's a mainstream source talking about the
crazy.
Benefits of drugs, which, as
That's
we
new.
See, going
yeah.
in is not normal.
It only took us 60 years.
Yeah.
You know. Set us back 60 years. You know, back in the day, before LSD was popularized and just psychiatrists were using it, there was a lot of published studies about how it reduced alcoholism.
Hmm.
So eventually, I think we'll be back to that era. So especially since I think people are realizing that depression is more than just a neurotransmitter imbalance. And the medicines we have clearly don't do much.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And we have treatment-resistant depression. So.
Yeah.
We need new treatments. Yeah.
All right. You ready to get into it?
Sure. Oh, first, we are trying a new segment. It's what we are drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Wandering Agnes Cider. Bloom is the type. And it's one of my favorite ciders. I've had it before. It's just a classic. It's on the sweet side. I'd say it's a semi-sweet. It's pretty good. I'll just take a sip here.
From Salem.
Crisp.
Salem,
apple-y.
Oregon.
Stuart? He's going to tell me what he thinks.
Oh, yeah. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. It's a classic cider.
It's like a Martinelli's. Tastes mm-hmm. like Martinelli's.
Yeah, it's everything I want
it's
in
nice.
A cider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Apple-y.
Yep. And it's I think it's like 6.5%. So it's not what is it? It's doing more than just it's not just Phoning it in.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I have here what's called a... It's the brewery is Block 15, and it's called Sticky Hands.
Sticky Hands. And I have never tried this, so let me try this.
And he does not like beer.
I don't. It's a beautiful color.
Beautiful color.
Smells kind of fruity.
Smells fruity.
Wow. Oh. Ooh, it's bad.
He looks That's like really, he might die.
It's really bad, Stuart. It's... bitter throughout.
Yes.
It's bitter in the front, bitter in the back, bitter aftertaste. Oh my god.
So this Block 15
just tastes like soap.
It's the Hop Experience Ale.
Oh my god. So oh my the aftertaste, guys. It tastes like I just licked soap. God.
Yeah, so this is like their Terrible. Beer they made. It's a double IPA, 8.1%.
God.
It's made to just tastes like hops.
Yeah, it's terrible. Why do they do that?
Oh, it's very good. It's really good.
Whatever.
All right, now, so getting into this week's topic, we're talking about the DEA.
Yep, and we are, this is the second recording, because last time we drank a little too much, guys, and it was a little too rambunctious, and by the end of it, we're just rambling.
We're just rambling and tangenting.
But if you guys, if that interests you at all, tweet at us. I don't even remember what our Twitter is.
No.
We should get a better one. But let us know somehow. And we're going to start a Patreon eventually. And we're going to release some of these fun episodes.
Like our very first one, too, we never released.
That's right. So you get exclusive content, baby. So,
yeah. And there's something else I was going to mention.
What?
Oh, yeah. So last week... Our chronology is kind of confusing.
Oh, right. Okay.
But last week, we would have done our second part of marijuana, where we talked a little bit about the FBN and who was that guy?
Harry Anslinger.
Harry Anslinger?
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of a continuation of that.
Yeah. So this is kind of less focused on marijuana, but it still carries right out of this previous episode where we're talking pretty much about the war on drugs.
Exactly.
That Harry Anslinger pretty much started with his marijuana.
Exactly.
Tour.
So, here we go.
Yeah.
So, to kick off the DEA, I kind of want to talk about the what was going on at the time in the country when the DEA was formed. So, this would have been the 60s, pretty much. And during the 60s, it was there was a lot going on, very tumultuous time. For example, we had the Vietnam War, which was very bad. And specifically, the counter-war movement was huge.
This is the beginning of the counterculture, right?
Yep. And, you know, the Vietnam War was very gnarly. There was, by the end of it, or no, from 1965 to 1969, 48,736 military deaths.
Wow, that's a lot.
Which is a lot, yeah.
Compared to other wars, you, I think you told me Iraq was...
Yeah, like, I think so far the, our Middle 4, East has been like 5,000
yeah,
since
that's
it
crazy.
Started.
And yes, that's because modern warfare has changed,
right.
You know, drones and shit,
right.
But still.
And then half of those deaths were draftees.
Yeah, so they don't want to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of racial tension in Vietnam, too. They did horrible things like put, you know, black people at the front lines
in the
most dangerous of places.
That's, wow.
And, you know, imagine being a draftee and then
that's
they're
like, terrible.
Yeah, you're
that's
the first
terrible.
Wave. Anyway.
Wow. And then I you know, I don't know why, but I remember in my high school history class that, like, we spent a lot of time on Vietnam. And I remember, like, talking about Hamburger Hill
because
it's, like, a massacre. And I remember talking about how, like, the Viet Cong would go around and, like, flamethrower bunkers.
Yeah.
And, like, it was, I think, pretty much the first time where, like, we had guerrilla warfare,
right? Yeah, I think so.
Like,
and big,
yeah,
in a big war like that, yeah.
Yeah, so
pretty brutal. And it was just awful. There was this horrible thing on Reddit of it was some guy's job to crawl in these tiny holes, you know,
clear out the holes.
Yeah, and they would just, you know, it's big enough just to crawl through, and you had a knife and a gun or a flashlight.
Oh my
and a
god!
Gun,
yeah.
And you just, oh my god. Anyway,
yeah.
So terrible war. Not a lot of progress being made. And by, like, the late 60s, early 70s, people didn't get why we were still there. Why are people still dying?
I have a fun fact.
Spit it out.
It's pretty fun. So, because, you know, the Vietnam War was in, like, jungle areas and everything was green.
Right.
Apparently, because everything's green, people that are colorblind, they can sense movement mm-hmm. better.
Right.
And so they would put these colorblind people in the helicopters, and they could spot the Viet Cong better than normal sighted people.
Right.
Because they were more attuned to movement. They weren't focused on color because everything was all green, so you couldn't tell.
Right. Also kind of a fun fact. Similarly, they said the Viet Cong are hiding in the jungle, so they said just burn the jungle down.
Oh, my God.
And that was there. Just napalm the whole thing, and there's nowhere to hide.
Oh, that's a little less of a fun fact.
And so this kind of represented a pretty big turning point in how the government was perceived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there had been bad things the government had done before this, obviously, but this was like people really started to realize the government was fallible. Mm-hmm. And not only that, was perhaps malicious, you know, and realizing they were doing things against the interest of the American people.
Yeah, I think up until this time, you know, you have World War One, World War Two, both of those wars, America was behind that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we were stepping in because we were the quote-unquote good guys.
Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty clear evil.
Mm-hmm. And here is where there is no sides, really. And we don't know why we're there. And it's a lot more confusing.
And we see us do horrible stuff. Like, what's the massacre called?
Hamburger Hill?
No, of where we killed a bunch of civilians. In some town. In Vietnam.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, we should know that.
Please stay tuned.
Yeah, hang on.
We are searching the internet, podcasting at its finest.
My mom told us we have too much dead space. My Lai.
Well, I'm filling it right now. So,
yeah, the My Lai massacre where
My Lai
between 347. Don't joke about that.
No. All right, we'll take that out. Just start again.
We won't take that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
347 and 504 people were killed by U.S. soldiers. Innocent people.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And there's a famous picture of this like little girl running out who had all her clothes burnt off.
Wow.
And then there's U.S. troops standing behind them with their gun, and that's not a good look.
Wow.
So anyway, people started to realize like, whoa, we're the bad dudes.
Also, isn't this like basically, like, I don't know this for a fact, but this is one of the few times, like, World War One, World War Two, were all, like, white and European, pretty much, mainly.
Yeah, right.
This is the first time I feel like the enemy is, like, a clear, distinctive race.
Right. Well, Japan.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah. But anytime that's involved.
Right.
Even Japan, it was more brutal, I feel like, than...
Oh, much. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like it's this thing that's, like, they're different than us.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's interesting.
Exactly. And most veterans who fought in the Pacific against Japan were horribly racist against mm-hmm. Japanese their whole life. Not the case with people against Germany.
You know that, I mean, if you, all the people you see are trying to kill you, that are like, it would be hard not to be racist.
Yeah.
Don't take that out of context.
So, where were we? This was a big turning point. There's a lot of other stuff going on, too. We had the whole segregation and race riots. Mm-hmm.
This is a time of MLK.
Mm-hmm. And so my main point is there was a lot of discontentment and a lot of bad feelings towards the government.
Bad juju.
Bad juju. Mm-hmm. And at the time, was it Johnson? Yeah, Johnson was president for a lot of the 60s. But at the time we're talking about, Nixon was president.
Mm-hmm. Richie Nix.
I think he was elected in 1968.
You could say anything you want, I'd believe you.
I'm going to say that.
All right.
And so Richard Nixon was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he's a Republican. And he was kind of more of a conservative in the sense that obviously he's not on the side of these protesters.
Mm-hmm. You smell that, Stuart?
No. Oh, yeah, we're making brownies.
Sorry, we're making brownies, guys.
It does smell good. Oh. And I think his constituents were mostly the people who kind of were hearkening back to the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. This era, I think I might be repeating myself, but I think it's what we didn't record, where like you think about like moms vacuuming, dads in suits, coming home, and everybody's like a perfect white suburban house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so those were his people. Excuse me. And he was looking around at all this protest and all these people against him. And in my opinion, and a lot of other people's opinion, he was thinking, how can I control these people? Mm-hmm. You know, how can I limit their damage to my reputation, my voter base, and get reelected? Because that's every politician's main goal.
Basically, how can I keep change from happening? Exactly. Right? Like, he wants everybody, like, there's a part of America that think thinks we're changing rapidly, and it's scary to them.
Exactly.
Kind of sounds like right now.
Yeah.
And people are fighting that change.
Exactly. So. And so him and his cabinet thought, what do a lot of these protesters and segregation folk have in common?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that?
Racism? Not liking drugs?
Liking drugs.
Liking drugs. Oh, what are the people...
Yes.
What are these counterculture have
exactly.
in common?
What do they have in common?
Drugs.
Sorry. Liking drugs. Doing drugs.
I thought you meant what are the other people?
I see, yeah.
Which are racism.
Yes, they are racist. And so in comes the Controlled Substances Act. I think mm-hmm. that was kind of his administration's answer to the question we just posed. How to limit these people.
And this kind of comes off of our episode previous about how... We delve in a little bit about how it was basically the war on drugs was the war on race and mm-hmm. the war on the quote unquote undesirables. So,
yep.
Listen to that.
So the Controlled Substances Act, it didn't just come out of nowhere. It had been developing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout, you know, beginning in really the early 1900s, the U.S. started to crack down on certain drugs,
mm-hmm.
as we kind of talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
But they specifically cracked down on opium and then, as we know, alcohol yep. for about 20 years.
Prohibition.
Then there was the Boggs Act of 1950, which we mentioned last week,
we
right?
We did, yep.
Which imposed severe penalties on marijuana use.
Mm-hmm. You'd get basically minimum sentences. Yep,
you get 2 to 5 years for your first offense. 5 to 10 for your second and 20 for your third offense mm-hmm. with no parole.
No parole possible.
There was the Marijuana Tax Act, which we also talked about, mm-hmm. which just taxed marijuana and hemp too, right?
Yep.
Just crazy.
And this was basically that came out of basically Harry Anslinger and his powerful people like the DuPont family wanting to keep paper in business.
Right.
So that's kind of where that came from.
And that was found to be unconstitutional, mm-hmm. the Marijuana Tax Act. So they kind of revamped it. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. Brownies.
Brownies are done, guys. All right. We're back. We got our brownies out of the oven. Mm-hmm. They are triple chocolate Ghirardelli.
Looks good.
We're
fudge,
letting them
right?
cool. Fudge. Triple fudge. Wow. Sorry. Yeah. And we're going to put some ice cream on those bad boys. Anyways.
Mm-hmm. Where were we?
Oh, I could kill it.
Oh. So the Controlled Substances Act. Whoa. Did you know you could edit in the phone app?
Yeah.
Anyway, I didn't know that. The Controlled Substances Act came in after the Marijuana Tax Act was found unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. And this is in 1970?
Yes.
It was.
Okay. And the Controlled Substances Act didn't really do anything all that new, but it took a lot of existing federal laws and rolled them into one single statute
mm-hmm.
while also expanding their scope. So I'm going to really quickly run through the listed scope, which were mm-hmm. like kind of the aims of the Controlled Substances Act. So it was meant to determine into which schedule, and we'll get into scheduling later, a drug or substance should be placed or whether a substance should be decontrolled or rescheduled. Certain factors are required to be considered, blah, blah, blah. They wanted to know the actual or relative potential for abuse, the scientific evidence of its pharmacological effect, the state of current scientific knowledge regarding the drug, history and current pattern of abuse, scope, duration, and significance of abuse, what, if any, risk there is to public health, its psychic or physiological dependence, liability, whether the substance is an immediate precursor of a substance already controlled under the subchapter.
Mm-hmm. And so all of this sounds very good to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is what we'll find out, is that all of this was not decided by scientists. Mm-hmm. It says, look at the scientific literature. Well, guess what? They did, and they decided to ignore it.
Yeah, we'll get into them just blatantly ignoring scientists.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Much like most things in government, it becomes politicized, and mm-hmm. scientists mm-hmm. are rarely listened to.
Mm-hmm.
So as we said, it created 5 different tiers of scheduling, mm-hmm. 1 through 5. Schedule 1 was considered something that had high potential for abuse with no medical mm-hmm. use.
So this would be the most restricted
yep.
schedule.
And we'll give examples of each schedule after this. Schedule 2 was considered high potential for abuse with some accepted medical use. Mm-hmm. Schedule 3 was medium potential for abuse with accepted medical use. Mm-hmm. Schedule 4, moderate potential for abuse with medical use. Schedule 5 was the lowest potential for abuse, mm-hmm. also with accepted medical use.
And then just briefly on top of this, on top of the schedules, there's what they call list one and list two substances, and these are restricted as well, and it's usually precursors to all of these that they restrict.
I see.
So
right, and now we'll go through some examples of the what drug is in each schedule. Do you want to read through these?
Oh sure. Okay. So for schedule one, we got heroin, LSD, marijuana, mescaline, 3-4 methylene dioxymethamphetamine, also known as
methamphetamine.
No.
Oh fuck.
MDMA.
Oh. Is
MDMA is a methamphetamine.
That's schedule one?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Wow.
GHB, which is like a benzo kind of GABA agonist thing going on. Ecstasy, which is MDMA mixed with meth. Shrooms, which is a naturally occurring substance, by the way, so cat, bath salts, synthetic marijuana, and methaqualone, also known as...
Cat is a plant.
Cat is a plant.
Not feline.
No, not the feline, yes. But if you do smoke feline hair, it's crazy. Methaqualone, also known as Quaaludes, right. Ludes. We'll look up Wolf of Wall Street, yeah. Guys. So, obviously, with Schedule 1, we can see some pretty clear, like, contradictory things already.
Mm-hmm.
We see that, like, heroin, which is very clear to have multiple overdose deaths, and yeah, it probably should be schedule one.
Yeah.
But in the same category is LSD and marijuana, which have like no recorded deaths.
Right.
Which is pretty insane. The potential for abuse for LSD is incredibly low.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like the heroin, it, of course, is incredibly high.
Right.
Is that what you were raising?
No, I was going to say what I find interesting, too, is that Schedule 1 is no accepted medical use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the first part of our marijuana one, we talked mm-hmm. about how throughout most of human history,
yes.
there's been numerous documented medicinal uses for mm-hmm. it. And so I think it's pretty insulting to all those mm-hmm. you know people just to say that it has no medical use.
In fact, one of the precursors of LSD, ergolene, what we talked about is used almost exclusively when giving birth mm-hmm. to restrict blood flow.
Mm.
And so saying that no medical use, even though they use it medically.
Right.
Also, MDMA.
Right.
We're in phase 3 clinical trials by the FDA, which is fast-tracked MDMA for PTSD.
Right. I'm pretty sure shrooms has been
no medical use.
Yeah.
Psilocybin has used in palliative care in
mm-hmm.
NYU.
Mm-hmm.
It improved depression rates in terminal patients by like 80%.
Yeah.
A bigger statistic than they've ever seen with any other drug.
Yeah.
No medical use? Bullshit. And we are moving on to schedule 2 here. We have amphetamine, which is it does include also Ritalin, also known as Concerta. Or, actually, Concerta is a little different. Adderall, Vyvanse, Dexedrine, all that's in there. Cocaine, morphine, oxycodone, methamphetamine. Now, this is interesting. Oxycodone, morphine, a lot of that stuff. We're having an epidemic of addiction issues. And it's Schedule 2.
That's crazy.
And part of that, I think, is definitely, I don't know what's going on.
Oh, here. You're just open Pokemon Go.
Oh, open Pokemon Go, guys. Part of the, oh my God. Part of that is, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Okay, I got it. Part of that is because, oh my God. Oh, I got it. Okay, schedule 2. I lost my notes. So I opened Pokemon Go. Okay, so part of that is because there's huge pharmaceutical companies like Purdue Pharma. Oh, you almost spilled your beer. Oh,
my God.
Purdue Pharma that basically fight to keep this stuff so they can sling it.
Yeah.
They're like drug dealers.
Yep.
Okay, moving on to Schedule 3. We have codeine, ketamine, anabolic steroids, and testosterone. Moving on to schedule four, Xanax. That's your benzodiazepines. Mm-hmm. Take some Xannies. Soma, Darvon, Darvocet, Valium, Ativan, Ambien, Tramadol. Those last two are sleep aids. Schedule five.
And I find that interesting because, as we talked about, going down the tiers is supposedly less potential for abuse.
Right.
Xanax and, you know, benzos are really
incredibly high abused. Potential for incredibly abuse. Abused.
And very difficult to get off of them once you're addicted.
Yes. Xanax and alcohol are one of the only thing you can die from when withdrawing from a drug is alcohol and Xanax.
So, so saying that has less potential for abuse than marijuana is crazy.
Or, in fact, just safety.
Yeah, wise. Yeah, very dangerous.
Also, the combination of Xanax, because of how it's a central nervous system depressant, and mixing it with alcohol, the rate of, like, deaths because you mix those two is through the roof.
And right now, a lot of people have been dying because it's mixed with fentanyl.
Fentanyl, yes. And we'll get to that. Scheduling, the effects of scheduling and making everything illegal, we'll get to like what that has caused. And one of the main things is it causes people to not know what they're getting. And so you get, you think you're taking Xanax, you're actually, it's actually like baking soda and fentanyl.
Yeah, and boom, dead.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, schedule five is Robitussin. Specifically the one that has codeine in it, I believe, is what they...
Oh, sorry to interrupt again. Yeah. I think there's a lot more, too, than Schedule 3, 4, and 5. Like, there's so many drugs in those schedules. We didn't say them.
Yes, all. Yes. Yeah. These are just representative. Yeah, examples. These are the big ones, yeah. Lyrica, some other random stuff. Some of it's Lomotil, which is for high blood or something about blood pressure. So it's all that kind of stuff. So... those are the schedules. Again, these are scheduled based on the things we said above, but a lot of it is not from scientists. The brownies are really good, guys.
I'm ready.
Oh. The brownies are really good.
I might have done that twice.
I'll put some ice cream in there.
Yeah, they are very good.
I'm going to eat these while Stuart talks.
Yep. So we just went over all the drugs that were scheduled.
That's right.
And now I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the controversy surrounding this scheduling. So when the act was being created, they did something called the Schaefer Commission, which was basically they asked this guy, Raymond P. Schaefer, to look over basically all these drugs and give them an assessment on their potential for abuse and that kind of thing.
Do you know if this dude, Schaefer, is a scientist?
He is a scientist.
Okay.
Yeah, well, he's legit. It was also known as the National Commission on Marijuana and Drug Abuse. I'm not sure if he's a scientist, but it was a scientific.
Okay.
It was well done.
Okay.
And he recommended the decriminalization of marijuana in small amounts. This is in 1968. Because the commission basically said there's very low potential for abuse. There is medical use. The exact opposite of Schedule 1. And they said...
like there's medical use now. Marinol for cancer patients. Yeah.
And they just said no.
Emetic? Make you eat?
And they said no. Sorry, Raymond. Thanks for your advice, but no.
So I don't get it. One of their aims was to, based on scientific evidence... and then they get scientific evidence and they just go, nah.
Exactly. And that's what makes
ridiculous.
Makes me think it's not really about the science.
It's not.
You know, because there's some ulterior motives. Another byproduct of the Controlled Substances Act, or around the same time, was the DEA. And the DEA first started out as the FBN, which we talked about last week, the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, which was...
Harry Anslinger.
And this was established July 1st, 1973. Our dog, Claire, is just staring at this ice cream. Mm. Wow. She's going to start drooling.
She already did on my pants over here.
Oh, gross.
Yeah.
The DEA was a law enforcement agency that was supposed to combat drug trafficking and distribution in the United States. When it was formed, there was approximately 600 agencies, and their agents. And these agents came from other agencies that were then merged to create the DEA. And, you know, the DEA had kind of the same problems as the Controlled Substances Act in general, where it was kind of being used to target these sects of society and put them in prison. And it was almost like the drugs was just a byproduct, was just like a shoddy excuse they were using.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the DEA was a very predatory agency, especially in the 60s, in arresting people. You'll hear stories of people getting, like, someone will approach them and sell them two joints, and it turns out that person's an undercover cop, and boom, 20 years. Crazy stuff like that.
It's insane. Were you hurting anybody?
No.
Yeah. This is an interesting part. There's a guy named John Ehrlichman who was one of Nixon's top advisors.
I love this quote.
And in the 90s, he was dying. And I guess, yeah, he said the Nixon campaign, these are quotes basically from his deathbed. He said the Nixon campaign in 1968 and the Nixon White House after that had two enemies, the anti-war left and black people. and then he said, you understand what I'm saying? We knew we couldn't make it illegal.
<That's pretty> clear.
We knew. Yeah, straightforward. We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or black. But by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and the blacks with heroin, mm-hmm. and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities.
Mm-hmm.
We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the evening news. And then he says, did you know that we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did.
So there it is, right yeah. there, right?
It's pretty freaking clear that this was just an excuse to go after people they didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of scary, and from what I can see, that's the first time the U.S. government, I'm sure they've done it in smaller cases before that, but it's kind of the first time the U.S. twisted laws in order to go after parts of society.
That's crazy.
Silence parts of society.
I don't want it to go to sleep.
Yeah. The computer.
The computer to go to sleep.
We just talked about society. You
won't go to sleep. Don't want to go to sleep.
So next we're going to kind of just go through the presidents and what they did with their stance on drugs. So after Nixon was Gerald Ford. And he didn't do much. They kind of continued the course. Same with Jimmy Carter. Didn't do much. Kind of continued the course.
Kept peanuts off the list though.
A lot of peanuts. Next was Reagan, who had a very big impact.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan, I think one of his lasting legacies is the war on drugs.
Yes.
And I guess, was that you know how every first lady has their thing?
That's Nancy Reagan's. Just say yes to life and say no to drugs.
Nice. What's Melania Trump's?
Bullying. Online bullying.
That's right. That is funny.
Even though, like, that is rich, his husband, yeah. her husband bullies everybody online.
I honestly
online.
Think they're trolling us at this point.
I think so, too.
That's crazy.
Isn't that rich? It's crazy.
So, on October 14th, I'll say the war on drugs was declared mm-hmm. October 14th, 1982.
So, the war on drugs, we talk about the DEA. And Nixon really made that happen,
mm-hmm.
and the Controlled Substances Act. Right. But the war on drugs really started with Reagan.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And something really important happened in 1986. There was a guy named Len Bias,
mm-hmm.
who most of us don't know him now, but he was basically hyped up to be the Michael Jordan of the time. He was a basketball player, college mm-hmm. basketball player, really talented and supposed to be a good guy, nice guy. He was drafted second overall in the 1986 draft, and he went out partying the night after he was drafted.
Uh-oh.
And died of a cocaine overdose.
Oh, no.
And Reagan really politicized this death
mm-hmm.
and made it a rallying cry to increase enforcement on drugs.
Do you think that biased the American people?
Yeah. Yes. and he used this death, you know, like I said, as a rallying cry, and he was able to get another $1.7 billion to fund this quote-unquote war.
Oh my God.
And he established more mandatory minimums.
You did that the first
time. I know,
time
I did.
Too.
Mandatory minimum.
Mandatory minimum.
I have a hard time saying that. I remember that.
Yeah.
And he was the first one to have the crackdown. It's my little catchy slogan.
Gets me every time.
The crackdown.
The crackdown.
And this is where they basically said that crack cocaine is worse than normal cocaine.
Right, right.
And this is very interesting because there was one group of people who were using crack at a much higher rate than the rest of society.
Who is it, Stuart?
You say.
Blacks.
Exactly. And so this is, in my opinion, a pretty obvious, like, oh my gosh, these black people are using crack way more. Make that illegal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's also, this is not for sure, but there's some conspiracy theories mm-hmm. that the government played a hand in getting the black people mm-hmm. addicted to crack.
I think you could say at least they were turning a blind eye to yeah. funneling crack in there.
And what really is the difference between crack and cocaine?
It's just basically you're turning cocaine into a form that you can smoke.
Yeah.
And you do that by adding a little baking soda. That's Boom. About it.
And does that, you know, does that make it so much more illegal?
No, and if you think about it, we can have the argument, crack cocaine, so like crack and cocaine,
mm-hmm.
the difference is analogous to heroin and Oxycontin,
mm-hmm.
oxycodone.
Okay. Right.
And those are in different schedules.
Right.
Is crack and, you know, like,
right.
I don't know.
So that was a pretty blatant, in my opinion, racist policy.
Mm-hmm.
When Reagan took over, there was slightly less than 500,000 incarcerated Americans. By the end of his presidency, there were around 1 million.
So he doubled it.
Doubled it. And a lot of those were drug offenses.
In 4 years.
Now there's 2,298,300.
And that's the highest imprisonment in any country, right?
Yeah.
I think we're the highest.
Oh, yeah. Per capita, we're the highest, mm-hmm. too, which is pretty scary.
It's insane.
Yeah, more than China or
That's crazy.
Iran, any of those countries. And then their big policy was the Just Say No campaign,
mm-hmm.
Which Nancy was a Reagan. Blatant failure.
Yep.
We're asleep again. Which was a blatant failure. So basically, Reagan's war on drugs, which you could argue is still going on today.
It is.
It's cost millions of dollars, mm-hmm. millions of lives, mm-hmm. and accomplished what? I still see drug Nothing. Addicts every day when I walk around. You
yeah.
know?
I was riding the bus, and I saw someone shooting up heroin underneath a bridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning.
Jeez. Yeah, it's crazy.
And I wasn't surprised.
I know. That's
I was like, oh,
yeah.
there it is.
Where we live, and I think a lot of the country, it's almost just normal. You know, I see like mm-hmm. the little orange caps on the ground all over the mm-hmm. place from the needles. It's really
yeah,
sad.
It really makes you think, like, I don't really, if fighting it is what is needed,
mm-hmm.
I support it.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, that's not working.
Exactly. And in my opinion, I think we need a more compassionate approach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these people, I think, need to be treated more as sick people
mm-hmm.
and need, you know, be given help.
And I do have to say, I think, don't quote me on this, but I went to a talk the other day, and it's about 80% comorbidity, which means occurring at the same time, with PTSD and people coming back from war, veterans, and mm-hmm. drug abuse.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it makes you really wonder, like, who, like, these guys are fighting mm-hmm. for our country,
mm-hmm.
and then they come back, and they can't help but get into drugs because of what they've seen,
mm-hmm.
and then we don't help them.
Yeah.
It's really
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, it's really sad.
So.
Yeah, wow. So next, after Reagan, who was the president after Reagan?
Oh.
It was his vice president.
It's not Clinton.
No.
It was vice president.
Spiro
Agnew.
It rhymes with George Rush.
Oh, George Bush?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. The
senior,
first one.
Senior.
Yeah, George
okay.
H.W. Bush.
Okay, then Clinton.
Then Clinton.
Then George Jr.
Then George
then
Jr.
Then bombers.
Then bomby.
Okay. Then
we don't talk about the next.
Yeah, but it's not even.
And George Bush, you know, he was only president for 4 years. I don't think mm-hmm. he did much. He kind of continued. Then we have Clinton.
Yeah.
And Clinton, I find very interesting because he's a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
and he actually did a lot of bad things, in my opinion. He, in other areas, but for the drugs, he rejected the recommendation to eliminate the disparity between crack and powder cocaine sentences.
And it's just so clear that, like, although they're essentially the same drug, who's doing the crack? Minorities and black people. Who's doing the cocaine? Wall Street millionaires.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, Wolf of Wall Street is not an untrue thing. That's pretty much how it was.
Yeah. And we haven't even talked about alcohol. How alcohol is totally legal and it's, you know, more detrimental than a lot of these scheduled substances. So that's all we really have to talk about. There's a few random little tidbits I'd like to just tack on. There's, we kind of mentioned this earlier. There's a guy named Bernard Noble, and his story is very common. He was given 13 years because he bought two joints of weed from an undercover cop. I think he, and then a random stat I wanted to put in is that the black rate of arrest for marijuana was 716 per 100,000. Whereas the white arrest was 192 per 100,000.
So way lower. Seven times as much?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
So way, way lower. So it's pretty clear that these laws are used to target certain minorities.
Black people are minorities.
Yeah.
So literally, that's not even just seven times. If they're equal, it would be seven times.
Right.
But,
right.
But since there's even
well,
less.
Well, that is per 100,000.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It's already taken
so
into
it's already
account.
Taken into account.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So that's kind of all we have on the DEA. As you can tell, I think it was basically, or the Controlled Substances Act and the DEA, basically a tool to be able to go after certain parts of society that were problematic for the government. And I think it had very little positive effects, even to this day.
And I just do want to briefly speak to the political... the reason behind what's the reason for making some of these drugs illegal and some of them not. And I want to give the alternative hypothesis, even though it sounds kind of like a conspiracy theory, but the idea that the drugs that are illegal are the drugs that make you think. And the drugs that are legal are the drugs that make you numb. And I just encourage you to think about, you know, what alcohol and heroin and all the downers pretty much do to you, and they make you be able to deal with things that are depressing and deal with things that are, you know, you kind of get jaded. And with marijuana and other psychedelics and things that are Schedule One MDMA, when you take those, I've heard that the people see things quite a bit differently.
Yeah.
And they kind of see things in society of how they really are, which is messed up.
Yeah.
And I think the people in power don't want you to realize that.
Yeah, right.
And you can call me a conspiracy theorist. You can do what you want, but I don't know.
That's my opinion on that. Yeah, I agree too. So that's all we have for this week.
Yeah, that's all we have. I hope you enjoyed it. I think eventually I want to do a separate episode on just pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I think that'd be neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, so stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, see you next week.
Bye-bye.